This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. In 2012, Jason Thielen was making a custom paddleboard for his then 9-year-old daughter. It earned them a lot of oohs and ahs when they took it out on the water, and eventually Jason found himself making a paddleboard for someone else. And then another, and then another, until his passion project became his full-time job. Jason specializes in hollow core wooden boards with contrasting colors of native Michigan woods married together in gorgeous geometric designs. Jason Thielen is the founder of Little Bay Boards, a custom paddleboard shop in Petoskey. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give folks a sense? I want to ask you about the boards themselves, but what is the size of the Little Bay operation today compared with the early years?
Well, we're still growing, but you know, I started in a little lean-to that was probably about 8 foot wide and 16 feet long. And then I've grown systematically to a bigger garage, to a smaller shop. And then we just moved into a large facility. It's about 10,800 square feet, purchased it right before COVID, and then kind of took like a slow track of developing it. And we moved in, probably in January of this year and started producing boards in March. So we're still pretty freshly new in the new building.
I almost feel like when I say custom stand-up paddleboard, like people aren't even going to understand until they go over to like your Instagram feed or something, because I think most of us have experience with, you know, the big fiberglass or plastic models that you can get at Dick's Sporting Goods or resale shops. But your boards are gorgeous. They're made of different kinds of native woods and I believe recovered woods too, right?
Yeah, we're definitely a unique product in the board industry, being hollow wooden, which isn't uncommon in surfboards, and it's kind of how surfboards started way back in the day, but they ended up being too bulky and heavy, and it took quite a while until engineering was achieved by my mentor, Paul Jensen, and when he figured that all out, surfboards came back into reality of being hollow wooden and very performance, and the SUPs are kind of just more of a mainstay of Michigan. We don't really have the surfing waters that, you know, you do out in the oceans. So I just developed an idea of how to make SUPs here out of natural resources. So I've been a hippie my whole life. My parents were hippies, always cared about the environment. And if you want to do something positive in the world, it should be something that reflects the generations to come, not just what you're doing.
You have experience in carpentry, but can you tell us a little bit about the woodwork disciplines that led you to the designs that people see today?
Yeah. I had a long background in carpentry of, 20 years working for my father-in-law, learning from knowing nothing all the way up to, leading crews for him. He was a green, sustainable home builder too, long before it was a cool thing. Actually won some awards and stuff like that nationwide and whatnot. So I've always been instilled to, pay attention to what you do environmentally wise. And when I got into the wood boards, it was only because I couldn't afford to buy a decent fiberglass board, raising a family and my wife stays at home and, single income. And I was just Googling around and found that, you could build wooden surfboards, and I figured you should be able to build a wooden SUP when it's not too much different. So it took a lot of studying and educating myself and going through things like that until I was able to build the first board, which is only just a glorified 8-foot longboard for my daughter, because she was only 9, weighed like 100 pounds.
Yeah. What was some of the early experimentation like as you were figuring out the design?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Being one of the first people to actually do it, there was a lot of experimentation. Also, by invention of design is because you can't afford the tools that you need to actually do it right. So you have to reinvent how to do it with the things that you have, which was actually a blessing for me. I was very lucky to have so much wood knowledge and tool knowledge and the ability to make things work the way that I could afford them, and actually ended up making better products. And having Paul as my mentor to guide me through some of those things, changed the game for me. My boards are known for their looks. Obviously, if anybody gets a chance to look at the website, it's mind-blowing, some of the designs. I'm not trying to brag about myself. They're just really cool boards. I have really good board builders, and we do some really, really, really cool things. But the designs of them are unique. The way that they float is unique. They're really well-performing boards, besides the fact that they're art to look at.
Yeah. For the first couple of years, there you were juggling the full-time work in carpentry with Little Bay's business. What was the transition like? How did you do this?
It was awful. No joke.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's just, to be an entrepreneur and have to supply for a family and stuff like that, there's a lot of risks in starting your own business. You know, there's a lot of unforeseens and unknowns, and I'm not a business savvy person in any way whatsoever. You know, I'm a high school dropout and just know how to work really hard. The first couple of years, it was, you know, it was fun just to build a board on the side and get some Christmas money and, you know, little vacation money and stuff like that. And I was working 60 hours a week or whatever. And then as the boards became more popular and people started noticing them, I started to get more orders, and I was trying to satisfy those, probably being a little money greedy, I guess, because it was all extra money. I was already working 50 hours normally. And then, you know, I was trying to fill in at night. And there was a transfer year of about like 9 months where I was pretty dedicated to about 100 hours a week and still trying to take the weekends off to be with my family. So that meant that I went to work at 4 o'clock in the morning and didn't get home till 11 o'clock at night.
Oh man.
Then I'd be exhausted on the weekends and pretty much pointless for my, you know, to be around my family. You know, it was a struggle. I have a very strong-minded, very willful wife that understood what I was trying to do and was there to help me, but it wasn't easy. I mean, there's nothing easy about doing that. You know, being dedicated that hard to working that many hours, it affects everything else around you. You know, the company was thriving while, you know, my health and life was deteriorating. There's a huge pivotal point in all of that. I came home one night, probably like 11:30 or something, you know, fifth day in a row, looking forward to having Saturday on the beach with the kids. And my wife was sitting at the table with two beers. And I was like, oh, you know, this is going to be the conversation. Here it is. She's sick of everything that I've been doing to her, you know? And she sat me down and she had this little doll thing, excuse me. And it was like this little paper mache doll with this raggedy head of yarn. And I asked what it was, and it was Shawnee, my now oldest daughter. She's the one I first built the board for. It was how she'd say goodnight to me at night because I was never home. And it was, you know, her little daddy doll. That was the moment of, you know, I got to stop what I'm doing, or I need to commit 100% to what I'm doing for everything, you know, for my family, my children, being a father, being a husband, and everything else. And so I decided to make the jump from my full-time career job that I had that was, you know, excellent and, you know, paved my way to adulthood, and asked my father-in-law if I could quit for a while and try to chase the board life just to see if I could actually make it work.
Man, I mean, people talk about that startup life and what small businesses are like, but moments like that, yeah, nobody prepares you for that, I think.
No, you know, some people will bring it up, you know, and I try to watch or listen to podcasts about people who start their business, and the family always seems to be the one that's overlooked, you know, and nobody ever remembers that you have a whole nother life that you're supposed to dedicate hours to, you know?
Yeah.
And when you're chasing a dream, it's easy to forget that really quickly and, you know, get wrapped up in how much work and how hard it is to make something actually happen.
So did it get easier once you just committed to the boards?
Yeah, for the first little while it did. I was in my parents' garage at the time because my dad had a little wood shop that I grew up in. I could be in there after I quit my full-time job. I could build 3 boards a month and be pretty comfortable, you know, but that was, you know, before a legit business was actually created. You know, I was having a hard time paying my taxes and all the legalities that go on and stuff like that. But I was building really cool boards and, you know, just enjoying what I was doing and, you know, trying harder to build even cooler boards to get more recognition and get the word out there more often and whatnot. And it was pretty comfortable. And then, you know, I started getting orders for enough boards that people weren't willing to wait like 4 or 5 months, and I was losing sales. And I was getting kind of concerned about that. I didn't want to lose sales. I needed sales, you know, pay for everything. Then I moved into a little bit larger facility. It was about 2,500 square feet. And I was able to build 5 boards a month there. And that was pretty good. But then making that commitment, there's always in Michigan, there's slow season. And this is before, you know, I was kind of, you know, known around the United States or anything, before Little Bay Boards was really that popular. It was just mostly locals. Every once in a while, I have an out-of-state person. So there were struggles there. You know, you'd have times where you just didn't get any orders and there's just no money coming in. And, you know, luckily I was still a carpenter and I could float back and go do like a flooring job or a roofing job for my father-in-law to make ends meet. And then just try to, you know, figure out the rhyme and reason of why I wasn't getting orders or why I wasn't getting recognized, or, you know, Facebook posts weren't getting noticed, or, you know, I was doing all my own marketing and my own branding and all that other silly stuff. Mm. So yeah, it wasn't giant rainbows and butterflies until, you know, this last year. And I'm blessed to do what I do, and the boards are amazing. And I'm thankful every day that I wake up to go to work, build what I build. But, you know, building business is crazy, especially with COVID. And, you know, we got all new employees now, and, you know, bigger building that's half done, and, you know, there's things, but still blessed to do it. It's just, it's hard to explain it to people when they say, wow, really good for you. And it's like, well, bigger places, bigger problems at times, but you know, still very, very, very blessed.
Jason, I read that you are the great, great, great grandson of Chief Petoskey.
Yes.
Are there ways that you think your family background has shaped maybe your work or just the person that you are today?
Yeah. You know, everybody's got their stories of their life. Anything that's ever happened to me is either something that I wanted to replicate or something that I wanted to make sure I never did ever again, or, you know, learn from that way. You know, my father was David Petoskey. He died when I was very, very, very young. You know, tragic party situation. So that molded me to a certain man that I was in my teenage years and my 20 years, which wasn't a good person. But then I met my wife, who taught me how to be a good person. And my stepfather, who's raised me since I was like 3 and a half or something like that, is a good man. You know, he taught me to be a man. He was not soft in any way. And that made me a very diligent worker and a very diligent father, you know, obviously with shortcomings, nobody's ever perfect. But and my mom's always been a hard worker, and chasing a dream has always been not one of their things that they ever thought to do. And it was really helpful when I did talk to them about wanting to chase my dream, and them telling me to, you know, stay where I was at, don't push the buttons, and, you know, you can't do this for a living, you know. And I heard that from multiple people when I first started it. And every time I heard a no, it made me drive harder just to prove people wrong.
Well, given how much change has just happened in the past couple of years, if 2012 Jason could see Little Bay Boards now, what do you think the biggest surprise would be for him?
That the 10-year goal that I wrote down was actually achievable. To remind myself that feeling that the hardest thing was to quit my day job and do what I was doing was probably one of the easiest steps in building a company and building a business and, you know, employing people and stuff like that. And just to remind myself that it takes a lot of guts every day that you show up to work to invent something that hasn't really been what it, you know, it is. It's one of our hardest things as a company is to recognize we don't have anybody that we can ask how they did this, because we're the first company to do it this way.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing the story of you and the partnerships that you forged along the way, Jason. It's just, the boards are beautiful, and we really appreciate everything you bring into the world.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Jason Thielen is the founder of Little Bay Boards in Petoskey.